Good morning and happy Thanksgiving to you from all of us here at The Takeaway. Today, we're listening back to some of our favorite conversations throughout the year. Those are conversations that you actually continued often with us online at thetakeaway.org. And first up is Pulitzer Prize-winning author Isabel Wilkerson. She's the author of The Warmth of Other Suns, The Epic Story of America's Great Migration. Wilkerson spent 15 years of her life documenting the period in American history when Southern blacks moved north and west to get out from under the suffocating weight of the Jim Crow laws in the South. 6 million African Americans eventually left the South, 2 million of them in just a 10 or 20 year period of time. Isabel and I spoke in September.
I grew up as the child of the migration in Washington, D.C. My mother had migrated from Georgia to Washington, D.C., and my father from Southern Virginia to Washington, D.C. in different decades. And met there at Howard University and married. And I am a product and perhaps would not even exist without the Great Migration, which is the case for many African Americans in the North and West.
And knowing that, it's really no surprise that you chose to center this book around three personal individual stories of three people. And you chose them after you interviewed about 1,200 people. You went all over the country looking for people who were part of the Great Migration, and you settled on three.
Yes, I settled on three. One was a sharecropper's wife in Mississippi. Her name was Ida Mae Gladney, and she left because there was a cousin of theirs who was beaten within an inch of his life over a theft that he had not committed.
And another one that's just really interesting is the story of Robert Foster. And he was an incredibly talented, smart doctor. And maybe you could tell us about his migration.
Yes, he migrated from Monroe, Louisiana, because he'd served in the Army as a surgeon. But when he got back home, he found that he could not practice surgery in his own hometown of Monroe. And he decided to set off on what became an unexpectedly treacherous journey across the desert alone. He was going to get to California and send her his family, but he had a traumatic experience in trying to get across the country, partly because there was no place that he could stay.
Well, you know, one of the things that you're examining in this book is how the Great Migration changed America. And it's impossible to really trace all of the different threads, although you do a really, really great job. But one of the things that struck me was just culturally, you list off a number of the musicians who would never have been born had their parents not met after migrating from the South. I mean, it's really like the course of music history, not just jazz, but we wouldn't have Motown were it not for the Great Migration. We wouldn't have Miles Davis. I mean, it really changed what we think of as American culture.
It's incomprehensible, really, to imagine what would culture look like in our country and sound like in our country had it not been for the Great Migration. First of all, the majority of African Americans that you meet in the North and West are descended from the Great Migration. 90% of all African Americans were living in the South at the time of the migration began in the early part of the 20th century. By the end of the migration, half of them were living outside of the South, in the North, and they were living in the North and the West and the Midwest. And so, of course, Motown is phenomenal because it would simply not have existed without this migration. Berry Gordy, whose parents migrated from Georgia to Detroit, had they not done that, their son would not have been in Detroit to be able to draw from other children of the Great Migration, such as Diana Ross, the Jackson family, so many other people in Motown. When it comes to jazz, Miles Davis, his parents migrated from Arkansas to Illinois, where he got the opportunity to play. Thelonious Monk, his parents migrated from North Carolina to Manhattan, to Harlem, when he was 5 years old. And John Coltrane migrated at 17 from North Carolina to Philadelphia, where he got his first alto sax.
That is a pantheon.
It is.
You know, Isabel, one of the things that's also incomprehensible is you can't really think visually about the northern industrial cities in the United States without large African-American populations. Yet this vivid scene on page 226 of your book, when Ida Mae got her first glimpse of Chicago. What did it look like at the time, Chicago, you asked her? It looked like heaven to me then, she said. And that's a different Chicago than we know today, right?
It is, because you imagine these people having come from rural open land with just fields and fields of either cotton for those people from those states, fields and fields of tobacco from people in those states, and arriving in these big cities with all of this energy, this metabolism, the streetcars, the high-rises, the people clip-clopping on the sidewalk. I mean, it was overwhelming for them, and it was exactly what they had hoped for.
There's something that you talk about, which is an odd phenomenon, to me at least, which is that so few people who are part of the Great Migration ended up really sharing the stories of what they endured in the South with their kids. We talked to one of our listeners whose father brought their family out of South Carolina. This is a story she told about going back to the South every year.
We went back to the South every single year when I was growing up and drive down Route 13. And my mother would always pack this big cooler full of food. For our bathroom stops, they were the side of the roads. And I could never understand why we couldn't go into the restaurants to use the bathroom or eat. And later on in life, my father told me that he would not subject his children to feeling less than because of the color of their skin.
But Isabel, Della didn't find out that from her father until she had to ask and press her dad for details about the Great Migration. Why are people so reluctant to really talk about it?
Well, I had that exact same experience with my own mother. She didn't want to talk about it. And part of it was because when they left for good. They were in some ways not relocating from one place to another, but they were in some ways seeking asylum. And they turned their back on all of that and started anew. Like any immigrant who may have come across from the Atlantic in steerage, they really were starting a new life, and they wanted to start fresh and not think about what they had gone through. They did not share it with their children in the same way that immigrants often do not want their children to necessarily know the old language, because they want to start new and be American. And that's what these people were trying to do. I discovered things about my own family that I had no idea. For example, how my uncle had left the South was because he had discovered that the man he was working for, when he was cleaning up for him in his office, that was one of his jobs, he opened a drawer and he found some white fabric. He pulled it out and unfurled a white robe and hood. And at that moment, he decided he was going to leave, and he went to Detroit.
That was my conversation with Isabel Wilkerson from September. Isabel is the author of The Warmth of Other Suns, the epic story of America's Great Migration. It is an incredible book, highly recommended, especially if you're buying books as Christmas gifts. The Warmth of Other Suns. Happy Thanksgiving.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.